Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Global Great Awakenings on globalfreedomtv.com. I'm Scott Bennett, your host, and we are once again, by the grace of the Lord, joining you. Blessed be the Lord, my strength, who teacheth my hands to war and my fingers to fight. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And we are being set free by wisdom and knowledge. Indeed, God says, my people perish for lack of knowledge. So we are going to be unloading and praying for wisdom and revelation with the great Stephen Pidgeon about so many things that are happening in the world today. Stephen, it is great to have you on with us once again. Let me just hand it right to you and get your opening salvo of the cannons of truth that you can unleash for people. Go ahead, Stephen, give us your assessment of what's going on in the world.
Well, thank you, Scott. It's great to be back with you and great to be here on Global Freedom TV. There's a lot of good things happening in the world right now. Even though, when you look at the chaos, you say to yourself, well, that can't be right. That's not good. That's impossible. That's going to be difficult. But there are many really, really good things happening, even though they look like they're very problematic. We know one of the things we know as a certainty is that the unipolar world has closed. The unipolar world is now over. And there are people who are saying, hey, guess one of the things that Vladimir Putin did? He ended the pandemic. Hey, well, yeah, that's true, right? All of a sudden the subject was changed from, gee, no more pandemic to what's going on in Ukraine. And ultimately that subject is going to be changed again as well. But when you look at the machinations of some of the deep dark people that fancy themselves as elite. Whether you're talking about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation under the tutelage of Bill Gates, or whether you're talking about the World Health Organization, or you're talking about the World Economic Forum under Klaus Schwab, and some of the machinations behind the World Economic Forum, which are very, very important. Some of the banking interests, or whether it's the Soros family, or the Rothschild family, or the Rockefeller family, manipulating what's happening in Davos, Switzerland, and also manipulating the voice of the Pope himself. These things are all acting in conjunction with one another, and they had all concluded on a narrative that was predicated on this idea of global climate change. And it's really not predicated on climate change per se, but rather predicated on the notion that mankind can somehow stop the change of the climate of the earth, and that somehow it's anthropogenic in its metamorphosis. That is to say, man caused by too many SUVs or too many exhalations or whatever it might be, but trying to label people as a carbon criminal and so on. We know that Al Gore has been successfully and totally completely refuted in his claim that New York City would be under 15 feet of water by 2010. Here it is 2023, and guess what? The coastline's the same depth it was last year. And it's not under 15 feet of water. So an inconvenient truth turned out to be an inconvenient fraud for most people. The British courts ruled that it was not eligible to be taught in British schools because it was inaccurate. And this happened more than a decade ago. And so now the rhetoric of climate change has been regurgitated and repuked by Jorge Bergoglio, who calls himself Pope Francis, who is not in obeisance to his papacy, not in obeisance to the creator of the heavens and the earth, not in obeisance to even Catholicism, but rather in obeisance to the banking community. And this is the ring that he kisses. And the fact that he's kissing that ring in Western Europe has led to his proclamation of 2015, the Laudate Si, in which he identified climate change as this fundamental premise that needed to be pursued. Now, in pursuit of that, he has given license to the LGBT social terrorism, going so far as to say pedophiles have a special place in heaven. The UN is now promoting pedophilia as an international agenda that needs to be approved, and Christians need to shut their face if they don't like it. Well, in the Eastern world, in the Eastern Orthodox world, and believe me, this schism goes way back. This schism goes way, way back. I teach on these subjects at Sefer Academy. And we've been looking at the seven ecumenical councils of Constantinople, which are recognized by all of the church, and upon which there are 14 more ecumenical councils created by Rome that are recognized solely by Rome, which created and was part and parcel of the Great Schism, separating Eastern Christian Church from the Western Christian Church. And the Western Christian Church has had animosity towards Eastern Orthodoxy ever since, arguably being responsible, at least part of the impetus, for the overthrow of the Tsar in the early part of the 20th century and the imposition of communism, with the goal of exterminating all of the practitioners of Orthodoxy in Russia.
And let me ask, Stephen, just really as a quick augmentation, is a lot of this material and the discussion and the general knowledge or suspicion of this material you're laying out, is it known, widely known, studied among all of the Russian people, educational institutions, schools, colleges? Is it known by a small percentage? Or, you know, what you're describing, I'm curious how well this is known or thought of in Russian society, in the Christian Orthodox society there.
Well, you know, one of the great philosophers in Russia right now is, of course, Dugin.
Yes.
And Dugin has expressed a lot of things, I think, and has a great insight about what's going on.
Who I met in Iran, and who was the first to bring over in Iran the revelation of the 46 biolabs in Ukraine and said, quote, there's going to be a war over these.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a great deal of respect for his understanding and perspective about what's going on, but I don't think that he clearly has articulated what happened with the rise of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. Because when you talk about the revolution of Vladimir Lenin and Joseph Jugashvili, the Georgian Jew who called himself Stalin, and Trotsky, who was also another Jew, what you find is that it was an atheist Jewish cabal. These are not people who believed in the Creator. They were Talmudists who were seeking to create political Talmudism as a form of governance that they called Marxism or communism. This communism is political Talmudism. That's what you need to understand. And it was being executed. It was articulated by the Khazarian Karl Marx and his partner, Friedrich Engels, and it was given legs by this communist party called the Bolsheviks. Mm-hmm. And the Bolsheviks, when they took power, they instituted high Khazarians in every political post in the Soviet Union. And it was a Khazarian who was responsible for the execution of the Tsar and his family in Yekaterinburg and their dismemberment and them being thrown down into the well. But these were pawns and tools of a Jesuit order that had been in place and was responsible for the assassination of Alexander III, and who came to bear with the idea of destroying Orthodoxy. Mm-hmm. And so you can see that when the Soviet Union rose up, the fear of communism and so on and so forth, but we used the worker state for our own purposes in defeating the international fascism that came out of Berlin under Adolf Hitler. Mm-hmm. And so there was very little terror concerning the communist party and its containment during the period of the rule of the atheist elite. As soon as Russia restored itself to orthodoxy, the Western Church again began to push in a way towards the extermination of the Russian people, in particular, the extermination of the Orthodox people. And so you see in Ukraine that there is a war in particular on the Russian Orthodox Church, with priests being thrown in jail, churches being vandalized, great monasteries being shut down, and so forth, claiming that they're somehow politically related. But the truth is that it's coming out of the Western impetus to destroy Orthodoxy, all arising from the same thing, the Great Schism. And, you know, Russia is, and many Russians do understand that Russia is the heir to the Byzantine Empire. You know, when you look at Rome, you know, Rome began in Rome, but then Constantine moved the capital to Constantinople, and immediately, two generations later, the division began. Eastern Rome, Western Rome. Western Rome failed in the 5th century. Eastern Rome continued to 1453 AD. Mm-hmm. And the last king of the Byzantine Empire had a daughter whose name was Zoe Palaiolog, and she ultimately married Ivan III, the grandfather of Ivan the Terrible, in Russia. And brought with her the lineage of Byzantium into Russia, such that Russia was the successor to the Byzantine Empire. The Byzantine Empire was at one time the largest landmass in the world, and Russia today is the largest landmass in the world. And it is dominated and controlled by culturally Orthodox people. So this is a very large issue. And the Orthodox people are once again anathema to Western liberalism. And Western liberalism now is now bordering on criminal insanity. You know, when you talk about the kinds, like, for instance, the new spokesman for Ukraine is a...
Oh, my goodness gracious, right? Yeah.
Right? And this person has the... this person who shows up with artificial breasts and who knows what other kinds of implants going on and hormone treatment and all this other stuff, and has the audacity to get on TV and say Russians are less than human, right? Yeah. And I wanted to say to this person, what part of the pronouns don't you understand, right? You
know, yeah.
Anyway, all of this stuff comes down to, it's a very important thing that we recognize that, first of all, Jorge Bergoglio, of the Pope, has been exposed and is now known as being in obeisance to the banking community. The banking community had a plan, and its plan relied upon an underlying assumption that NATO weaponry and U.S. weaponry was far superior to Russian weaponry, and that they could deploy a proxy war in Ukraine that would force Russia into a position of weakness, allowing a hopelessly indebted West to move in and steal $75 trillion worth of natural resource assets in the nation of Russia. They're not the first people to eyeball Russia for that purpose. Adolf Hitler had the same thing in mind. Napoleon Bonaparte had the same thing in mind. And both failed for the very same reason. They underestimated their enemy dramatically.
Yes.
So now on the world stage, we see something emerging now that is really quite alarming. First of all, it appeared to be a two-front war was going to arise. One war in Eastern Europe with Russia, and another war in the South China Sea over Taiwan, with a potential third adversary between Korea and Japan.
Mm-hmm.
North Korea and Japan. Those things look like that was the predicate environment into which we were coming in this year.
Well, let me just say, too, if those two were initiated, you automatically would have Iran shutting down the Persian Gulf from any and all oil exports going to the United States. I think Iran would have joined that alliance and said, no, we're not going to allow a global war that inevitably will take us down if the other two multipolar world countries are taken out. I think that is the other variable, is Iran's quiet solidarity with Russia and China. But yeah, that's,
I think that's a very important point. And you made this point earlier on another broadcast you did with RT, which I heard, which is something to consider, is that there nonetheless is this front with Iran opening up as we speak, American troops being deployed, and a confrontation with the Iranian speedboats to see what's going to take place in the Gulf. You and I both know that one tanker sunk at the mouth there is going to close the whole Gulf. It'll close the whole thing. And it can be done. Iran could do it very easily. But we also know that the problems in Yemen have not gone away either. And the explosiveness between Israel and Hezbollah, Hamas, etc., is on the table right now, with Israel barely able to hold its nation state together. Mm-hmm. And you have this condition in Israel is something worthy of discussion, because it was the Netanyahu government that gave complete license to the LGBT terrorism to reign supreme in Israel, advancing the six-colored flag, and the government paying the LGBT community to parade in the sacred city of Jerusalem. Now, the Orthodox who live in Jerusalem were absolutely up in arms. You can't do that. You can't do that. You can't do that. And Scott, no matter what Kufi tells you here, you know, Christians United for Israel, but no matter what they tell you, Israel has never been united on the idea of Zionism. There is an entire camp of Orthodox Jews that are opposed to the Zionist approach.
That's right.
and to the delivery of the land in what we call Israel today. They're totally opposed. They said, you cannot take this by force because you are forcing the hand of the Creator, not following His will and doing His will. Mm-hmm. And there has been a nonstop stream within the Zionist movement to force Armageddon, to force the creation of a third temple, to force a, you know, giant synagogue under the Temple Mount. All of these things being done to push the world into making Jerusalem a trembling cup. Well, while they're doing this, all of this machination that was engendered by Netanyahu to pay the LGBT community to advance its interest in Tel Aviv and up into Jerusalem has now backfired. The Orthodox saying, look, we demand changes such that the Supreme Court in Jerusalem, which is where it's located, and by the way, that Supreme Court is a Masonic temple, that is actually a Masonic temple full of blasphemy. It has 32 steps up to the courtroom, and the judges have to walk on an upside-down cross to advance into those courtrooms, just to give you an idea. But nonetheless, they are saying the Torah is going to become the law of the land, the Torah and the Talmud, such that the Supreme Court can say, well, guess what? The Torah says death penalty for homosexuality, right? They can say that. Now, the people in Tel Aviv understand that that's what's coming. So there's 100,000 people in the street in Tel Aviv. The same people that you encouraged to be under the rainbow flag are now marching against your interests. And you have many people saying, I'm not going to fight in the IDF. Pilots are saying, I'm not flying your planes anymore. So Netanyahu is basically trying to contain a civil war inside of Israel. At the same time, Hezbollah is at its strongest point in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And so this confrontation between Hezbollah and Israel is looking like it's going to take place. The Russians have secured Syria in a way that's not been seen before. The Russians are not prepared to take any more guff, if you will, from American UAVs of flying intelligence reconnaissance over the area and doing other things that Trump was getting away with in Syria. The Russians are not going to allow it to happen anymore. So you have a situation now. And last but not least, the Iranians have already demonstrated a hypersonic missile capability. They have hypersonics, which can have the distance to strike Israel. And Israel has no defense for that. I mean, Iron Dome and Patriots and so on and so forth, or THAAD systems are going to do nothing against hypersonic missiles coming in. And a hypersonic missile with one nuclear weapon on it, if detonated over Israel, creates an EMP that renders virtually all the technology in the country moot. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, that can be followed with 2, 3, 4, 5. Technically, one very powerful nuclear weapon kills 2/3 of the country. Mm-hmm. So this is the situation. And of course, the uranium is now being enriched at a nuclear level. And they're saying that Iran could have 30 nukes by the end of the year. And my own personal opinion is that Iran has many more nukes than that. But they have taken a position that is one of, you know, we're a position of caution. They're not going to start the war. But
no, they're not. And that's what I've always seen. And it's consistent with their religious and their educational and all of the character of the country. Iran is not going to initiate any conflict, but they will respond. As I've said, they will not fire first, but they will fire last. They've endured all sorts of horrific treatment for the last 50, 60 years. They've endured all sorts of, murders and shooting down of planes and such. And I think with their missile technology, which is superior to Chinese technology, I know that, and they're very close with Russia. You're going to see an Iran that is really invulnerable to Israeli attacks. And if the Israelis are stupid enough to think that they can initiate an attack on Iran, it will result in a backlash against their country. Russia will also provide Iran. Again, we're entering a phase where Russia, Iran, and China are mutually collaborating to protect each other, to protect their sovereignty from an American, UK, NATO war. The NATO, US, UK agenda has not changed in 40 years. and the world has caught on to it finally. And now they are closing ranks, and they are preparing for a final expulsion of the United States from U.S. Central Command, from Africa. Africa Command is going to be removed. The 2/3 of African nations are all on the side of Russia. They're kicking out the French. I think the French are going to try and impose another military intervention, but it'll turn into a Vietnam overnight, and the French will lose miserably. And on top of that, all of the blacks in France, the moment France starts to act aggressively and militarily against any African nation, you're going to see the Africans in France turn even more savage and bloodlust and violent than ever before. They're waiting for an opportunity to just turn into a bunch of chimpanzees on cocaine and burn and loot. And as Dustin Nemo said, they're already chopping off people's hands in France. And I couldn't believe it. I was flabbergasted when he was saying that. So there is a great uprising that they're not reporting, I guess, in France. But Russia, Iran, China are consolidating. Russia and China have done a naval patrol up in the Aleutian Islands area in your neck of the woods. And now we see the last days of the Ukrainian situation, with Russia basically exhausting and annihilating all of the ragtag remaining parts of this Ukrainian army. And the next thing I think is going to fall is you're going to have the complete collapse of the Zelensky regime, the assassination and removal of Zelensky. They're already talking about it. I'll pose it to you. What do you think is going to be happening to Zelensky? What is the future there? Is the West going to kill him to try and create a truce, a stalemate, a 38th parallel, something along those lines? Or are we going to witness, just Ukraine basically dissolving between Poland and Lithuania and Russia? Or is Russia just going to completely push through and say, no, we're owning the whole country now. You had your chance. Now we're taking everything. Everything's off the table, and we're getting rid of Zelensky. And if anyone has a problem with it, we'll see you on the battlefield. What do you think, Stephen? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's going to be ultimately how it plays out. Now let's talk about 2D chess, not 43 dimension chess that Trump plays, but just 2D chess, right? And the 2D chess is very simply this: they've advanced their rook, they've advanced their king's rook to the Suwalki corridor. This is Wagner PMC. They've advanced King's Rook to Wagner corridor. They've advanced their bishop, King's Bishop, to Niger.
Yes.
And so you have a couple of things going on. So now Macron, who had the opportunity to sit down with Putin, and Putin told him they had a long conversation, and Putin told him, look, unacceptable to make Ukraine into a position where it can put long-range cruise missiles in its company, in its country. Now Macron is putting long-range cruise missiles in France, and one of them was used yesterday to strike a city north of Moscow with a devastating blow, with a devastating destruction. Now, by doing that, when you see that happening, Russia knows that Macron has put in long-distance cruise missiles into Ukraine. Okay, so what's happening now? So the next thing you see is 60%, more than 60% of Africa is in military alliance with Russia.
Yes.
And they're looking at this, and of course the understanding is, okay, France, you've colonized us now for more than a century, and you guys are filthy rich living in the garden, and we haven't improved one iota when it's our uranium powering your nuclear power plants, when it's our gold making you rich. What are you doing? What about us? Oh, you guys don't count. You're only Africans. You're subhuman. You're this, you're that, you're the other thing. Well, the guys in Niger, the guys in Burkina Faso, the guys in Mali, and by the way, the guys in Mali, remember what happened in 2011 when NATO decided that they were going to go into Libya.
Yes.
They had no cause of action. Now, I just want to remind everybody what happened in 2011. Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, two war criminals who were engaged in crimes against humanity and war crimes with the so-called Arab Spring, denying food in Tunisia until they caused riots, and causing the overturn of the threatened overturn of most of the nations in northern Africa, decided to take ISIS personnel and Al-Qaeda terrorists that we were apparently paying in Iraq to shoot at our own troops.
Yes. Yes.
And move them into Libya and claim that they were in a civil war with the Libyan government trying to liberate their people from the tyranny of Muammar Gaddafi, and that Gaddafi was killing civilians.
Yeah. And using Qatar as a stage to play out dramatized scenes of such revolution. And they were purely theatrical propaganda films filmed in Qatar pretending to be done in Libya.
Yeah. And so here you had this. And so Gaddafi's like, well, we have to stop these terrorists. And he was taking what any normal state leader would do would be to take a police action to confront these terrorists that were in the western side of the country. And as a result of him doing that, we launched 110 cruise missiles into his country, killed him, and tried to kill his children and his grandchildren. And who was the one that was at the front of the forefront of that attack was the French leadership.
Yep.
Using the NATO banner that they used to fleece the bank account of Libya and to steal the Libyan gold to yep. put in French coffers. And while they were there, they tried to make a move on Mali, which yep. also has a substantial gold reserve. Mm-hmm. They tried to make a move on Mali. Now, you think Mali forgot that? Do you think Libya's forgotten that? I can tell you who has definitely not forgotten is Algeria. Mm-hmm. And Algeria is the most armed state in Africa. And the Algerians have already said, let's get it on.
Yeah.
Let's do this thing. Let's get it on. Come on, France. Let's get it on. So you have Algeria, Libya, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, all joining together to say, we're not doing France anymore. Get out.
Yeah.
Get out. And so now Macron, who's playing right into this move, you know, King's Bishop to Rook 5. Here goes King's Bishop to Rook 5. Oh, we better move the queen over there to confront that bishop. Well, do it. You were the guys who were putting the cruise missiles in Ukraine. Now you can put French troops in Algeria. Yeah. Now you can start calling the French Foreign Legion back from Kharkiv, and you can start moving them down into the Algerian desert. Because now Macron has got two fronts.
And he's got an internal guerrilla war waiting to ignite. All of these blacks that are in France are waiting to be activated as active guerrilla domestic disturbance operations. They will bomb, they will blow up, they will destroy property, they will turn Paris into a garbage heap, a burning tire, smoldering ruin. What you've seen in Black Hawk Down in Somalia, you would see in Paris. And the police will be overwhelmed because these blacks, these Africans in France will go into fight to the death mode
right.
because they'll see if we can cause France to completely implode inside while they're engaged over in Africa and foreign affairs, they'll lose on both sides and we'll just come marching through and make France and Paris our own little new African state. I think that's exactly what they'd be thinking. And Russia would go, you brought it on yourself.
They did. And of course, a lot of this we've already seen in France, Scott. There have been riots in every major French city. Paris has turned into a ruin. It's a dump.
Yeah.
And and the rest of France, it's not a place you'd want to visit right now because of all the riots and the burning that's already taken place. And this is going to escalate. So now France has got its hands full and is about to lose its source of uranium for all of its nuclear power.
Yes.
So France is going to now experience the same kind of poverty that Germany is experiencing as a result of the deprivation of natural gas from the blowing up of the Nord Stream. Now, with this happening, and who also is present in Niger? Wagner PMC.
Yes.
Wagner PMC is also present there, and they are engineering their structure as to what they're going to do. Now, let's talk about the Rook 4, which is taking place in the Suwalki corridor. Here you have Wagner that's moving about 9,000 troops into the area. They don't know what's going to happen. Right now, Wagner is deprived of heavy armor and other Russian arms. That could change in a heartbeat, just like this.
Sure.
Belarus has activated 150,000 troops. They have them at the border. So Poland says, well, what are we going to do? Well, Poland and Lithuania are getting together, 3,000 German troops, 1,000 American troops, all present in this area. Oh, we're going to cut off the Suwalki corridor. Well, Wagner has probably picked out the town already, and I think it's Reskow that they picked out. And they said, we're going to go into Reskow, and we're going to take that city just like we did to Bakhmut. Yes. We're going to come in there, and we're going to create the meat grinder. Yes. So bring your troops in, and we'll just keep grinding it and grinding it and grinding it and grinding it and grinding it until you end up with 85,000 dead, just like the Ukrainians did at Bakhmut.
Yes.
So in the meantime, there's something that very interesting that's taken place in Ukraine, which is, you know, the oblast that is right next to Kiev in Ukraine is Kharkiv. So you have, you know, you have Lugansk, and then you have Kharkiv, and then you have Kiev. So, and Kharkiv is this area that borders Russia. Kursk is immediately to the north. Mm-hmm. This was where the greatest tank battle of World War II was ever fought, in that region. Mm-hmm. The Germans went in with 2,000 panzers and came out with two. Okay, and so here we have got all these Leopard tanks, and like the Russians haven't seen this before. The Russians have seen this. It's on the same battleground, for heaven's sakes. Right?
And they've got T-90 tanks, the best tank in the world, firing, 12 miles farther than their competitor?
Yeah, well, you know, there was a recent video clip of one Russian tank taking down two Leopards and four Bradleys. One guy.
Yes.
Like, what did he do? Yeah, he just took them all out. One guy, right? And so now you're going to see something very similar take place here. So what's taken place in the last day is that the Russians have advanced 25 kilometers in Kharkiv. Just immediately, just boom, because guess what? There's nothing there's only cognitive dissonance now.
Yes.
There's
yes.
no meaningful defense. There's only a couple of guys here, a couple of guys there, a couple of guys here.
Yes.
So the army is now beginning to advance, and they're going to advance in Kharkiv, not out of Zaporozhye through Nikolaev, but rather Kharkiv towards Kiev. And so they're just going to push through to Kharkiv until they come to resistance. And they're not going to come to resistance because the only people they're fighting are Polish and Georgian mercenaries and German yes. and American and French mercenaries. And most of the Americans have pulled out because it's much harder than Call of Duty.
You know?
They're out,
yes.
right?
Yes.
So now you're going to see this battle is going to quickly fade and the money is going to quickly fade.
Yes.
And so as this continues, Zelensky's going to be, the Russians are like, we're not going to take out Zelensky. We want to get Zelensky down to the last, we want him to be the last man. Everybody else is dead. Hey.
Yes.
Hey, Volodymyr, you're the last guy.
Yeah.
The rest of your army is gone. So why don't you draft yourself and head out to Donetsk? You know,
yeah.
It's going to be a case of, now that we're here, Vlad, what do you got to say for yourself? So here's your choices. Here's a Beretta 9mm. Take care of the project yourself, or we take you back to Moscow for 2 years of show trial.
Yes. Yes.
And so, I mean, I see it going in that point of view. And then at the end of the day, the Russians are going to take all of Ukraine. They weren't going to take all of Ukraine. They were not going to do that. They were going to secure the, you know, Zaporozhye, Kherson, Crimea.
But they can't because it's a cancer now, because the West is too invested and they realize the West is maniacal. It's obsessed. It's driven to hysterical levels. It has no reasonable, it has no capacity for reason anymore. Look at Pence, this lunatic that once was somewhat of a conservative, people thought, is now abandoning all reason when Tucker Carlson, in his, you know, sort of semi-clumsy way, says, you know, why, most Americans can't name Ukraine on a map, and yet you're more interested in sending tanks to Ukraine. What about America and the broken borders and all the things, the cities in ruin, the fentanyl, blah, 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 blah. Don't you have any concern for that? And he's, well, frankly, Tucker, that's not my concern. You know, and we've seen, you know, just playing Russian roulette and it goes off. But this is all over Washington. It's all over America. It's all over the Democrats and the Rhinos and the Republicans. And in a sense, it's even infected Trump because he's got this, well, I'd settle it like that. I'd settle it. I'd go in there and everyone would, you know, have to abide by. I don't think so. I think what Putin would say, step aside or we will move you aside, Mr. Trump. And your people, if you think for a second you're going to bring in any American troops, any American planes, any American tanks, any American ships, we will annihilate them all. We are now at war. We had a military operation before to come in and stop the Nazis, stop the Ukrainian biolabs, stop the genocide, stop the torture, stop everything that your CIA was doing since before you were any even knew what politics was, since you were back in New York. But they have been doing this since 1994, 5, 6, 7, and have accelerated it under Obama and put biolabs and targeted Slavic DNA. We're coming in to do a clean sweep of the whole country. We love the people. We love the Ukrainian people. There are our cousins. There are Slavics. But these Nazis, these Khazarian Jewish types like Zelensky, they're dead. And we're not going to stop until they're dead. We're going to catch them first, but we'll catch them whether they're in Miami or New York or in the bedroom basement of Biden. We'll get Zelensky. I think the Russians are committed and tenacious enough to do that, because this whole thing, they were very slow to rise. They gave all sorts of opportunities, and we just spat in their face, and we continued to kill and shell women and children, and in the face of all of the things that were discovered, the biolabs connected to COVID-19. I think Russia is saying the West is so invested, we can't allow one centimeter of Ukraine to have a pro-NATO American European Union flag. It's going to be either a friendly Russian country or it's going to be a no man's land like we had between East Germany and West Germany, that little piece of soil that people used to run across between the barbed wires and the towers and the machine guns and the barking dogs, where people didn't live. They were killed if they crossed that. Ukraine will be turned into that, because Russia will say, we're creating a buffer so that you can never do again what you've done. And Belarus is on board with that. And I think, the whole NATO thing is going to fall apart too. There is no NATO. There's a bunch of clucking old hens, castrated fools like Jens Stoltenberg, who just make a lot of noise. But at the end of the day, Russia knows, you cluck, you keep talking. They don't care. There's nothing there. There's no teeth. These are castrated mutts. And Russia has been saying, okay, we're coming in and we're going to prosecute this. And we're winning Africa. We're winning the Middle East. We're courting Saudi Arabia, even though Saudi Arabia in a certain sense is a kind of a whore anyway, but she's going to be Russia's whore, no longer America's whore. So it's all coagulating in a way that Russia dominates the kinetic battle space. I don't know how effective they've been in the information influence operation psychological war. If they listen to me, they'd probably be a hell of a lot more successful, but I don't think they've been as aggressive as they could be in winning the hearts and minds of the local Ukrainians to turn against their own government. But that needs to happen. And the other thing that's going to happen is the inevitable breakdown of the economies of Europe when natural gas that the U.S. is selling them goes to, four-fifths of their dollar that they make at the end of the day. The French, the Germans, the British, everybody up in Europe, they're going to be spending four-fifths of their dollar, pound, Deutschmark, franc, whatever it is, and they're going to have one-fifth left to what? Eat mice? Eat sawdust bread? That's what's going to happen. And then what's going to happen after that when Europe starts to get gaunt and, like the prodigal son, they're going to go in. If we go back to Russia, at least we can eat the corn that the swines eat. And I think you will have the overthrow of some of these governments violently in some ways, breakup of Europe. You'll get parts of Germany that will say, fuck all you people. We're going back to the new alternative for Germany. And the first thing we're doing is cutting off all relationship with the U.S. and going to say to Russia, we're sorry, we've got a new regime. Let's make peace. Can we at least have enough fuel to survive? And then you're going to see Russia be the prodigal son's father. And say, put shoes on his feet and a ring on his finger. The prodigal son, the Germans, the French, whoever they are coming back. Here, of course, we'll give you gas and everything else that you need to survive. And then they've won Europe. Checkmate.
Steven? That's a very good point. Now, I think the way it stands right now, it's got a couple of things. One, Ukraine could end this war right now. if they didn't have this insane leadership, Zelensky, who's killed off, you know, roughly, you know, a third of a million Ukrainian men, and who has destroyed virtually all of the arsenal of Western Europe.
Yes.
You know, every tank that they could run has been shipped into Ukraine. Every aircraft that could fly, they shipped it into Ukraine. Every piece of artillery that was still mobile, they moved it into Ukraine. Every bit of ammunition they had for all of their artillery has been moved into Ukraine. All of their cruise missiles that Britain had, that France had, except for their long-range cruise missiles, have all been expended in Ukraine. So Germany has admitted it. France has admitted it. Britain has admitted it. Even the United States has admitted it. We're out of ammo. And so when we got to that point in the United States, Joe Biden elects to commit a war crime by sending in cluster munitions, and the cluster munitions are being used against the civilian population in Donetsk. That's what's going on. This is knowingly done by the Biden administration, whether they were talking about using HIMARS to hit schools and hospitals and apartment buildings in Donetsk, using artillery or using UAVs or using these cluster munitions that are now being used against civilian targets in Ukraine. So any Ukrainian leader with a brain could say, okay, hold it, stop. We're done, we're finished. You say you're finished, you concede the land that has been, you know, that you should have known you were gonna lose when you became Nazi. When you decided it was only Ukrainians, only speaking Ukrainian language and only the Ukrainian culture, you had to give up the lands where people spoke Russian and had a Russian culture.
That's right.
That's what was, it was destined to happen. As soon as you became eugenicists and racial supremacists, you had to give up that land.
Yeah. You were cutting yourself off.
You did it
Russia
to yourself.
Russia never cut them off. They cut themselves off. The moment they made those declarations, they cut themselves off. And the republics, Luhansk, Donetsk, Crimea, said they're cutting themselves off. So we're our own independent republics and we're part of Russia. They're the ones who made this choice.
Yep, that's exactly right. Poroshenko and this, and you know, and the American CIA exacerbating it, going in there and saying, you know, you should hate those people. You know, you should hate those people, are weird. Those people are less than human, just like this current CIA operative, this transgendered CIA operative, being the spokesperson for Ukraine.
Let me put that video on real quick because it is hilarious and it is significant. Here we go. I know this is hard to watch, but it's exactly all right. So right here, we've got the new spokesman, an American in Ukraine, spokesman for the Ukrainian army, and it's a homosexual transgender man pretending to be a woman. And here's what he says.
Do you know the difference between us and them? Besides fighting under this flag and for freedom on behalf of the people of Ukraine, while the Russians are fighting for tyranny and dictatorship, it's pretty simple. We're human, and those guys most definitely aren't. Slava Ukraini. Do you know the difference between us and them? Besides fighting under this flag and for freedom on behalf of the people of Ukraine, while the Russians are fighting for tyranny and dictatorship, it's pretty simple. We're human, and those guys most definitely aren't. Slava Ukraini.
I mean, it's the sickest thing. It is the end of Western civilization, Stephen. It is God's judgment upon this country. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I shall repay all of the wickedness, all of the death, all of the destruction that we've done all over the Middle East, in Libya, in Afghanistan, in Syria, in Iraq, all of that, God is bringing the judgment upon this country. He's giving us mad leaders. When the wicked rule, the people mourn. And the wicked have these homosexual, transgender, child-molesting, lunatic, schizophrenic, mediocre men who think they can have silicone breast implants and take hormone blockers and put on a blonde wig and call themselves a woman. They're not. They're schizophrenics. They're sexual monstrosities that are eventually going to kill themselves when they fall into madness. This is the beginning of the madness that'll consume America, like World War Z, like I Am Legend. You are going to witness all of the leftist lunatics, the Democrats who embrace this madness, killing each other, dying off, or the moment they go against conservatives, they're going to get killed. It's remarkable. But I'll hand it back to you.
Well, you know, here this person says, we're fighting for freedom under this flag. That's absolute a load of baloney. That there is no aspect of democracy existing inside of Ukraine. It is one of the most ruthless dictatorships in the world. Zelensky has shut down all opposition media, all opposition television stations, has imprisoned all of his adversaries. It's the same way that Biden is attempting to imprison Donald Trump right now. Same methodology. They used it in Ukraine at the advice of American intelligence agencies. Oh, the guy who's taken a position of contrary to your plans, well, he's committed treason because he disagreed with you. Put him in prison. Way they go. So Ukraine is, there is absolutely no aspect of freedom whatsoever in Ukraine. And the young men in Ukraine are running from the people who are out there seizing young men on the streets to put them in the meat grinder in eastern Ukraine against Russian troops. They're running away from them. And recently, a Ukrainian soldier was published as telling them, look, not all of us have died in the Eastern Front. And when we get back to town, you're dead.
Yes.
You who forced me into this meat grind, who forced me into a trench, who forced me into a tank with no training and insufficient arms and everything else. When we come back, you're dead. Yes. So you go around and collect somebody else on the corner. But when we come back, you guys are dead. Most of those are going to be the very first people killed by the returning troops.
Yes, I agree with you. That's a very accurate prediction. The Russians certainly could capitalize on that by simply telling the truth, saying, we didn't want to go to war with you. You were thrown into war to be killed by Zelensky. We're offering you a chance to come out, stop fighting us, overthrow this madman, and take your country back.
Well,
those of you who want to live and go back to your wives and your mothers and fathers and your children and raise crops and live in peace, we want that too. But you have to go back and exterminate this plague, this disease that is infesting your city, your capital. This is your country. Take it back. And I think that would be a winning play. That's the way to win this, is turn over a Wagner-sized internal domestic liberation force, a freedom force of Ukrainian soldiers that are, returning to say, no, this needs to be a coup d'etat. This needs to be, we need a junta put in power to destroy and have war crimes tribunals against all of these Nazis.
Yeah, and that is really what it's going to take to achieve peace, because even if you reconcile, and virtually everybody that knows anything about Ukraine knows that there's no possible way that Ukraine is going to take back Donetsk, Luhansk, Crimea. It's not going to happen. It's absolutely not going to happen.
Never, never, never.
Yeah. And so as a consequence, you need to resolve this. This could have been resolved early, but instead, you think about the battle tactics. Think about the battle tactics of Zelensky. It was as stupid as you can get, right? Run it right up the gut and let's see what happens. Well, guess what? It's 4th and 100 yards, and you guys have not made any gains whatsoever, right?
Yeah.
And instead, you've lost every bit of armor that's been given to you, every bit of armament that's been given to you, every advantage you had, you've lost it all. And you've lost it all. I don't know who the general was that's been orchestrating this, but it is absolutely the worst battle strategy ever seen by anyone ever. And so here they are. So when you look at that, you have to ask yourself the question, did Zelensky do this intentionally? Did he intentionally put 350,000 Ukrainian men in the grave? Did he intentionally do that?
Yes, yes, for Jewish Khazarian repopulation, thinking that they can move up into that territory.
I think you may be right about that. So here's the thing, when you see that kind of action, so Russia looks at this and says, look, what we wanted from you was we wanted neutrality guarantees, a guarantee of no NATO, and a guarantee that this is going to be a neutral state, and you have to respect the Minsk Accords and let these people live out their lives the way they want to live out their lives. And the answer was, no way, we're going to kill them all, exterminate them all, and then you get a bunch of Sieg Heiling going on, a bunch of new tattoos and a bunch of Nazi rhetoric. Well, guess what? Now what do you have? You got a bunch of Nazis in the graveyard.
Yeah.
So the situation is now Ukraine can come back and say, look, we wanted to negotiate a peace here. And I don't think Zelensky can do it. I think you're right. It's going to have to be an overthrow. It's going to have to be a junta that comes in to overthrow the current regime, make sure that all that leadership is gone, and then they can come back and say, okay, now we want to make peace. If there's going to be any Ukraine at all, it's going to have to be an absolutely neutral country, no part of the EU, and no part of NATO. And even
that's exactly what Wagner should be camouflaged as, a Ukrainian liberation organization. I mean, that's the way to really cause the West to go into scatter, is to say these troops that are returning from the trees and the dugouts and the trenches, like Rambo coming back against those who betrayed him in Rambo Part 2, Murdoch, I'm coming after you. Zelensky, we're coming after you. You know, I want to see videos and clips of Ukrainian soldiers, you know, Wagner soldiers, but Ukrainian people pretending to be Ukrainian, if you will, and even though there will be real ones. But that needs to happen, is a rising of the indigenous Ukrainian blood against this puppet regime of Nazi fanatics who were drugged out of their mind too in 2014 on ecstasy and all sorts of stuff. Their soldiers have been given drugs. There's been a lot of documentaries on all of the drugs found on the soldiers, which turned them into the maniacs that caused them to do the horrific tortures to the civilians they get.
Yeah.
With window cocking up the anus and the vaginal cavity that causes the person to split apart as that foam expands. That's what they've been doing to these poor Russians in eastern Ukraine. They all deserve to die a scalding, horrific death for everything that they've been doing after these civilians. And I think Russia is going to exact that vengeance and win the entire game, while the West is just flubbering their lips in Elmer Fudd stupidity.
Well, but the key issue here now, Scott, is how far is Russia going to go? So Poland appears to not have a brain.
Yes.
Well, yep. We want. Really? Is that what you want to do? You want to look like Ukraine? You want most of your cities to look like Bakhmut? What are they thinking? Poland appears to not have a brain. And what's very interesting is that, and I think this is something that is underlying the tenor. You can see it in the ideas of Dmitry Medvedev. You can see it in Serovikin. You can see it in Shoigu. You can see it in Putin. There's no belief that NATO has the capability to do more to Russia than what they're currently doing.
That's exactly right, Stephen. That's exactly precisely right. And Russia is going to wage an offensive defensive war. They will push all the way up to the Polish border and have all their weapons and all their men and all their dugouts just standing by. And the Polish or the Lithuanians or the Americans or British are going to try and do what the Ukrainians did, and the Russians are just going to grind them up. And they are prepared for a long war, a long smoldering war, where Poland may like a clown in a tin box jump out, but then it's going to slowly be dissolved and chopped up and ground up by the Russian defenses. Oh, they didn't like what I was saying, huh? I said they'll be all ground up by the Russian defenses. You can't hear me?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the British, you have to keep in mind, the British have got 72,000 men in uniform. Right?
Yeah.
That's not going to be sufficient to even face Wagner. And the French are completely ill-prepared. The French are going to have to deploy their troops inside of France just to hold their country together.
That's right. Yeah.
Let alone lose everything that they have in Central Africa, which they're on the cusp of doing that. And let alone try to put troops into Poland. They should have thought about this before they gave long-distance cruise missiles. They should have thought about that. They didn't. And ultimately, what's going to happen is, for every strike that takes place inside of Russia, something in France is going to burn.
Yes.
And in the meantime, Britain, the United Kingdom, is becoming crippled, economically crippled, because of the circumstances right now. And the British are looking to say, hey, aren't we your ally of the United States? And the United States is like, well, we used you for a while. Now we don't need you anymore. You're kind of like a bad roll of toilet paper. Once we use you, we got to flush it. Yeah, I mean, sorry, you're done. Yeah. You know? And so, and once again, you have Charles, who's been misled by the nose. And you have a bunch of prime ministers who took bribes. I mean, you know, Boris Johnson bought himself a $38 million home, paid cash for it. Where'd that money come from, Bojo? Where'd that money come from?
I don't see him living long.
Well, you know, let's ask Jacinda Ardern from New Zealand. Where'd you get the money, Jacinda?
Yeah.
Where'd you get the money, Jacinda? Jacinda, tell us, where'd you get the money? Where'd you get the money, Bojo? Where'd you get the money, ScoMo? Where'd you get the money, Justin?
You know, Stephen, before we end, I want to go into this for a few minutes while we have some time left, because it's so important to segue out of Ukraine for a moment. And let's look at President Trump. Let's look at the specific charges in Washington they're trying to bring against him. And I think amicus briefs are going to be filed, of course, that are going to be very illuminating to show that Donald Trump is not guilty of what they're accusing him of. But the judge in particular. The judge is the same judge that jailed Marina Butina. She used to work on the Hunter Biden law firm. She used to work there. She's been instrumental in a lot of these leftist ideologies. She tried to command the Office of Refugee Resettlement to give abortions to youth in their custody, which is a violation of the Hyde Act. Remember, the Hyde Amendment said you cannot spend any government forces or government money on abortion. But this judge, I anticipate she's going to put a gag order on Donald Trump. Then she's going to say he violated it. And then she's going to try and throw him in jail. Whether they know that an insurrection civil war may be triggered as a result of throwing him in jail and or killing him in jail. Stephen, I'll put it to you. If you were his attorneys, what would be the things that you begin to say and do about what's going to be happening? Go ahead.
Well, I think the crux of this case comes down to one primary and fundamental issue. Everything they are accusing Trump of took place while he was the sitting president. In other words, until January 20th of 2021, he was the sitting president. And the longstanding doctrine is he has absolute immunity from criminal or civil prosecution. Premise number one. So was he acting in the office of the president when he did anything? Well, yes. He's the president. I don't see how, when you're sitting in the office of the president, there is nothing that you do, whether you're sleeping or getting a checkup at the doctor, that is not the acts of the president. It's the act of the president, unless you have been adjudicated as mentally and physically incompetent, like you've come down with a stroke and you're in the hospital somewhere, something to this effect. Everything else you do is an act of the sitting president. So any acts that they allege that he committed on up until January 20th, 2021, are covered by absolute immunity from criminal and civil prosecution. That's premise number one. Mm-hmm. Premise number two. So now I've been up against this. I've sued on this issue before in courts, in federal courts. And I can tell you that the underlying case, there's an underlying case that says, well, if you were acting outside the scope of your office. Now, this case, this presidential case, it's a 1920s case. I don't remember the name of it right now, but it's a 1920s case. A prosecutor, he was engaged in activity that was outside the scope of his office. And so because he was outside the scope of his office, then you could say, okay, well, you were outside. You weren't doing the deeds of a prosecutor. You were doing the deeds of a criminal. You were doing this, you were doing that, and the other thing. Now, therefore, you do not have the benefit of absolute immunity. But I can tell you, trying to get around absolute immunity for the president is going to be just about impossible. Did he have Secret Service coverage at that time? Was he in a limousine? Was he flying in Air Force One? Was he flying in Marine One? Was any of these things going on? Then he was clearly operating in the office of the president. Did he have a duty, Scott? Let me ask you this. Did he have a duty to do anything about a known rigging of the election? Now, this rigging of the election is now proved. They just ran into warehouses that had hundreds of thousands of ballots in them, that had paid off prepaid cards, burner phones, and weapons with silencers on them.
Yes.
They, you know, the 2,000 mules where they've got film footage of guys stuffing the ballots. I mean, it is well known throughout the entire world that the election of Joe Biden was a fixed and rigged election.
He had an absolute duty under the Constitution and as President of the United States to initiate action, because one of the things that he did get reports of, we were back there in Washington, D.C. on November of 2020. He was given a briefing about how the AFL and AFL-CIO and the SES were planning insurrection operations and protests and all sorts of disruptive actions way up until the end of January. That was what occurred on January 6th, but we warned that in November 2020. He was also given notice of the Chinese Communist Party working with Union Bank of Switzerland, a notorious bank that was funding terrorism under the Obama and the Clinton State Department. The Chinese Communist Party and Union Bank of Switzerland had used Staple Street Capital to acquire the voting machines. And those voting machines were used to tally votes in the United States presidential election. When he was receiving that in November 2020, and he even got more information earlier, but he had a duty to say, my fellow Americans, I have received intelligence that the election has been interfered with. There's fraudulent participants. There's all sorts of things. I am commanding the military, the CIA, the National Security Agency, the National Reconnaissance Office, the geospatial agencies, everything under the sun with an intelligence cyber capability of a federal level. I am initiating them to track and investigate and give me a report in 30 days or 60 days. The election, nothing is going to happen because in a sense we're at war. And I'm directing the governors and I'm sending the marshals and I'm sending military teams in of investigators because this is a national security threat. He could have responded with that sort of militant, manly, martial character because that's what he should have done if it was, and it was a national security threat because our nation has been destroyed ever since that. But instead, nothing happened. You're right, Steve.
Close. The nation has been destroyed since this occurred. He had a duty. Now, there's where we get into the rub, Scott, and this is where the judge matters, because if I'm Trump's lawyer, I'm going to say two things. One is, first of all, he has absolute immunity from these charges and you can't charge him. That's predicate number one. And the judge, the response from the other side is going to be, well, he doesn't have absolute immunity if he was acting outside the scope of his office, which we think he was acting outside of the scope of his office. So the judge makes a ruling predicated on the fact that, oh, there was no rigged election. That was a fully and fair election of the Democratic vote, which is, she's going to say, which is a fact, by the way, at issue. It is not a fact proved. It's a fact at issue. But she'll use that to make the decision that she can pierce the veil of absolute immunity. Second argument. Well, guess what? The Constitution provides for absolute immunity for the president while he's sitting there. And then there's what's called quasi-immunity. Quasi-immunity also applies, which we think is also a protection for the president, given that he was, again, acting within the scope of his duties to confront a fraudulent election, a fraudulent, false, and rigged election. So, boom, here's our argument. Okay, well, I'm going to rule against that because it was not false, it wasn't fraudulent or anything else. Okay, well, then here's where we got the ultimate stopper. The fact of the matter is that all the facts that you're alleging right here as reasons to prosecute the president were all addressed in the bogus impeachment case, the second impeachment case that they brought after he was no longer the sitting president. Race judicata. The thing yes. has already been raised. He has already stood at jeopardy. You cannot put him at jeopardy again. Okay, so those are the things that I think, that those are the fundamental legal arguments. And in order for any judge to continue with the prosecution, the judge is going to have to rule that the behavior of the president as the president, right on up to January 20th, somehow was not him acting as the president in order to deprive him of absolute immunity. That's what it comes down to, Scott. That's what it comes down to. Now, if the judge says, well, we're just going to blow through the absolute immunity aspect of it, we're just going to pierce through that veil and just put you right in jail. Mm-hmm. Well, under those circumstances,
I think that's what they're going to do. I think she's going to try and do that.
Crazy. And if that's the case, I mean, once again, you know, you have people who are under the impression that they're above the law and that they can manipulate the law any way they want. Yes. And they don't realize that when you terminate the rule of law, then you automatically, it's just like in Ukraine, when they decided that they wanted to be a Ukrainian nationalist country, yes, one culture, one language, one race, they automatically started a war. And it's the same thing here. When you decide you're going to take your political opponent and put him in prison, you're not putting Trump in prison. You're terminating the Constitution. You're terminating the American way of life. You're terminating everything that is known for purposes of establishing a dictatorship. Now, let me just make this prediction, Scott, because I don't believe this is anything about Joe Biden, because Joe Biden, quite frankly, is a demented
I agree with Alzheimer's
candidate that is just a puppet. And he is doing nothing. So this isn't about Joe Biden. What this is about is creating this office of coming dictator. And yes, it's not going to be Kamala Harris. Okay. Right. It's going to be the rider of the white horse. And the rider of the white horse, who is currently running the White House right now behind the scenes, is going to come out, and there is going to be a mechanism. It won't be Gavin Newsom. It won't be Michelle. Mm-hmm. It's going to be Barack himself, and they're going to assert Barack as an emergency candidate because something has happened, whether or not it's a nuke going off somewhere, whether an aircraft carrier has been sunk, whether something has taken place somewhere, somehow, something of a major substantial crisis strikes, and then it's going to be, and it may be Joe Biden's last act to say, well, what I need to do now is I need to appoint an emergency czar.
Yes.
I need to appoint an emergency chancellor, yes, like Hindenburg did. I need to appoint an emergency position to somebody who can engage in executive management of the government while we sort out the fact that I am disqualified under the 25th Amendment, that Kamala Harris is disqualified under Article 2, Paragraph 5, because she's not a natural born citizen, and because we can't possibly allow a Republican like McCarthy to take over the position of the presidency. I'm appointing a temporary czar in a wartime footing to manage the governance of the United States, and it will be Barack Obama.
Yes.
He will step in a red cape and horns on his head. He will come in as the manifestation of Satan himself into the United States, and this judge who was appointed by him,
yes,
has been doing his dirty work, is going to say, well, let's put Trump here, let's put Trump there. It doesn't make any difference, really, what she says. And it doesn't make any difference if he goes to jail.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any difference. The fact is, the death knell for the United States has been ringing now for a number of years. Clang, clang, clang. And everything you see in the landscape around you is a dying empire.
Yes.
Everything you see is a dying empire. And so as a consequence, you know, as I said before, and I'll say it again, one of the reasons the Russians haven't attacked the United States is because it's impossible for them to do more damage to the United States than what the Biden administration is doing.
That's right.
So if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
When your enemy's destroying himself, don't get in the middle of it.
Don't do it. And so they're sitting here looking at this going, okay, these people are idiots, right? Yeah. I mean, you think, you know, Biden has terminated every alliance we've ever had. He's terminated relationships with all of our friends. He's destroyed our economic productivity. He's destroyed our industrialization. He's destroyed our manufacturing base. He's given away all of our arms. He's completely degenerated and demoralized the American military. He's destroyed the social order. He's absolutely put us at war. He's unleashed the LGBT social terrorism on the whole nation. And he's just, and you know, and then he sits back going, hey, I needed some more ice cream. And by the way, Hunter, have you got any more kickbacks coming in from anybody?
And he destroyed the Nord Stream pipeline, Germany's lifeline to staying alive.
That's it. And he's not done. I mean, look, giving a $94 billion Air Force base to the Taliban, right? Yeah. That was that's in the old days, you know what we used to call that, Scott? A smooth move, right?
That was China's going to own that. Say thank you very much, Joe Biden.
Yeah, we like that. Thank you. And you know, and he lost in Sudan. Now he's losing in Ukraine. A battle he should have never picked. A war he should have never picked. But when you get half-wit morons who all they know how to do is parasite money in order to get elected into politics, making decisions about the military. Oh, killing Russians is the best money we ever spent. Well, Lindsay, why don't you get in a little green uniform and get your butt out there and see if you can kill a few of them?
Yeah.
What are you waiting for, buddy? Hit the road, Jack. You know, this kind of stupidity that's going on in Congress. We're tough. We're mean. We got a military that is... We don't have anything. How come you guys didn't read any of the reports? How come you guys don't know about the Su-35? How come you don't know about the Kinzhal? How come you don't know about the Sarmat-2? How come you don't know about the Poseidon? How come you don't know about these things? How come you don't know? You don't know because you were too busy scratching yourself and looking at yourself in the mirror while you're begging for money.
Yes.
Well, you didn't know, and now you're finding out. Now you're finding out the hard way. Now the next question is, how do you stop Russian influence from reaching all the way into Western Europe? And this is
going to be- You can't because of the starvation and the abuse and the horrors and the torment and the agony that the Americans have been electrocuting Europe with. All of the pain and suffering, it's like electrodes hooked up to the European body being shocked. And it is America pressing the button. Russia is going to remove those electrodes, and suddenly relief comes. And then Russia's going to make overtures and poetic invitations to friendship, healing, not brotherly embrace. They burned that bridge, and that's going to take 50 years to see how it rebuilds. Right. But Russia is wise enough not to exact vengeance. Russia will be the good Samaritan that heals the broken and bloody body of Europe that's lying on the road.
That's been raped and abused and trashed and left face down in the gutter. And let me just say this, you know, one of the things that recently happened in Russia was Putin discovered that 5G towers were killing infants.
Yes.
In the country. And so he's banned 5G. Now, for those people who live in Liverpool and who are part of the Liverpool resistance, and who oppose 5G in Britain, guess who took down 5G in Russia? You know, the guy is your friend. He is your friend if he takes down 5G in your country as well. And we have people that just, most of Americans just don't care. It's like, look, I've got money invested in that particular technology, so I don't care if it kills kids. I don't care if it, you know, and what's mind-boggling to me, Scott, is that in California, right, everybody has to drive an electric vehicle. Well, you can't produce enough electricity to keep your air conditioners working, let alone put 25 million electric vehicles in the field. It's absolutely the dumbest, stupidest stuff. These people are absolutely insane. They're pathological idiots. They're just gone. They're gone Johnson. Green, 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 green. What are you guys drinking? Green poison somewhere. You know, let's get AOC out and make her the president of the university, right?
No. It's a remarkable confirmation that God has turned this country over. When the wicked rule, the people mourn. He has given them strong delusion to believe the lie. It's a spiritual darkness that God has brought upon this country. And those of us who believe, who the Lord Jesus Christ is in our hearts, we are discerning, we are watching, we're listening, we're going, wow, this really is the collapse of America under the weight of its own sin that has been allowed to accumulate on the roof of America. Homosexuality, abortion, divorce, transgender, homosexual, all this stuff, crime. I mean, the length is lengthy. International wars. All of these things God is allowing to come back. What a man sows, he shall surely reap. We are reaping this, and we haven't even got into the Stinger missiles and shoulder missiles and Kalashnikovs and God knows how many other weapons from Ukraine are going to be coming up through Mexico, up into Texas, up into California, Steve.
Got films of it happening already. Fully armed men coming over the border. It's already happening. And these kinds of weapons, all of this stuff is floating on the black market because they were, you know, of the weapon we introduced into Ukraine for the first year, about 60% of it was sold on the black market. And so all that weaponry is going to come flowing back into the country. So, you know, the question is, can the United States heal from this absolute wickedness that has happened?
No.
As a result of the overthrow? No.
Pockets of it will. Archipelagos will be formed in state. Regionalization will be. It'll be a musical chairs. Things are going to be entirely reorganized in this country. But America as it was, as a continent, as a sea, the shining sea and all that. No, my soul, my spirit tells me never again. The sun has set on that once American continent. I take no pleasure in it, but I'd be a fool or a liar if I said anything otherwise. I think the sun is set on the national continental United States. Forget what the clowns say in Washington. They're just trying they're rubbing sticks to create smoke to try and hide in. But we are going to have a complete collapse, and pockets of America will be conservative, and they will, and then pockets of America will just go stark raving mad, and I think you're going to have, sort of a, not a dystopian view necessarily, but I think you're going to have people, by any means necessary, defending their towns and their streets and their children and their schools. They're not going to tolerate people coming into their stores and stealing cigarettes, as that Sikh guy. Do you see that video? The black dude comes in stealing cigarettes, and the Sikh and his son grab him, and the Sikh dad starts beating the hell out of him with a rod. That's going to happen all over America, and worse, to people that think they can continue that.
Yeah. And, and I think also you're going to see a new political structure, which is going to take place with the isolation of these cities.
Yes.
The cities that are diseased, ultimately, there's going to be walls put around those cities.
Yes.
And they're going to be declared not part of our jurisdiction. That city is no longer part of our jurisdiction. That city is isolated. It's walled in. It's its own camp. Go in there if you want, but you can't come back out, because we're not going to allow you. You can't come back into this territory without a passport and a visa that we're going to grant after we do our due diligence on you. But you're not coming out of these cities. They're going to be walled in, and they're going to be encampments of ultimate poverty. Escape from New York.
Escape from New York. Yep.
It's going to be that kind of environment. And so I agree with you. Now the question is that with the, again, we're talking about the unwinding of the empire, right?
Yes.
It didn't take long in this country. Pax Americana from 1945 until 2025. That's it. That's the entire scope of Pax Americana.
Yeah.
Because we did anything and everything. We had the license. We granted ourselves the license to do anything and everything. And one thing that we never looked at doing was to pursue the path of righteousness.
Yes.
To hold to the tenor of scripture and to follow what Yah had told us to do, and to do those things and to follow the path of righteousness. Had we done that, we would be in better shape if we followed the tenets of the First Nations, whether you're talking about the Cherokee or the Arapaho, or you're talking about the Sioux. They at least had some standards of supporting nature and holding themselves to a measure of integrity. We've got no integrity. We've got no shame. This country is absolutely shameless. And because it's shameless, and, I go back and look at the movies, from about 1999 on, and it's all these crimes that are being committed by intelligence agents. They just go into cities and kill people, shoot people in the head, shoot that guy, kill the person at the hotel, run over this guy, smash that guy, do this. And there's absolutely no chance of them ever being caught, arrested, tried, and convicted for anything. Because after all, they're intelligence agents. So they get to do these things, right? And so you see this kind of stuff going over and over and over again. It was movie after movie after movie. Look at how ruthless and murderous these intelligence agencies are, and they get away with this stuff, and nobody can touch them because they're so untouchable. They're so above the law. And this was the whole sales pitch for the first 15 years of this century. All of these people who've been engaged in building false flags, in building color revolutions, in building coups in nations that where we had no business being at all, and doing it for the sake of this is what we do. We're so gifted. We're so talented. We're so above everybody else. We can just treat these peons like the dirt that they and the filth that they are. And if anybody gives us any lip, bomb them. All that works until you come into somebody who's got the same amount of strength you do.
Yep.
You get to beat up everybody until a guy's got a right hook that's as strong as your right hook.
Yep. And then everybody you've beaten up in the past has a new best friend. There's another strong man to protect us from the bully.
Yeah. And thankfully, that strong man is not Islamic,
right?
Is not Buddhist, is not communist, but instead comes to the table saying, we honor these traditional, and this is one of the things that Dugan has made a big point of saying, it's the tradition of the culture that has to come back. Now, I'm not necessarily a big fan of tradition. I like correctness over tradition.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, the tradition of the Russian people is orthodoxy. And, here in Alaska, Scott, and I'll just say this in our last few minutes that we've got here, You know, Alaska was initially the indigenous people here were contacted by Russian Orthodox priests. It was a fellow named Joseph who came into Alaska in the 1600s. And he started a small church at a place called Unalaska, which is now across the harbor from Dutch Harbor on the Aleutian chain. And he would work his parish in a rowboat in Bristol Bay. He'd work his parish in a rowboat in Bristol Bay, and he'd row himself back and forth, blah, 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 blah.
Throw fish to the bears to keep them away.
Yeah, yeah. And this is what he did. And of course, you know, so Russian Orthodoxy started here in the 1600s. And then you see the Russian Orthodox influence in Kodiak, where they built a church, which was the initial Russian capital. And then ultimately, they moved the capital to Sitka. And there is a Russian church in the downtown Sitka to this day.
Wow.
And the Russian Orthodox Church still has 53 churches in Alaska. So we see the meeting of Catholicism and Orthodoxy here in the state of Alaska. And our history is, I mean, I remember when I got here, it was the first time I ever saw a samovar was when we first moved to Alaska. We went up to some friend's house, they had a samovar up. And we saw the Russian churches in Kenai, and we saw the Russian churches in Kodiak. And the thing is, so Orthodoxy has its own courage. It's the point I'm trying to make. It wasn't the British East Indies Company. It wasn't the Hudson Bay Trading Company that came into Alaska first. It was Orthodox. It was the Orthodox who came in. And they came in here and lived lives of deprivation and struggle to put up a little tiny church to teach people how to worship. Right?
Wow.
So, and even though they were sinners and they made mistakes, they did this, they did that, and the other thing, doesn't make any difference. The point is that when you look at that tradition, this is a tradition that is admirable. And one of the things I'll say about Eastern Orthodoxy, Eastern Orthodoxy has a protocol that includes a great deal of fasting. So when you go to an Eastern Orthodox church, there's no chairs. There's no sitting down and getting comfortable watching a big screen TV, eating popcorn while the preacher gives you 30 minutes of ho-hum. And then tells you, you know, go out and sin all you want and you'll be forgiven next weekend. In Orthodoxy, you stand during the entire thing. And, you know, and there'll be a cantor reading the Psalms for 2 hours before somebody finally comes in and gives the service. And the priest will pray over those people, not saints, but those people who gave up their life to build that particular church. Those people whose life they went without, that church might have something, that the doors might be kept open, that the place might be kept clean, that they might have a building fund to put up the spire and so on. Those people are recognized in the church and they pray over them and they, you know, do the incense thing and all of this thing while the psalter is singing the psalms, you know, and so all of these things. And then, of course, you know, I mean, I disagree with the icons. I'm not an iconoclast. I disagree with the icons. I don't think that that's proper.
Right.
And, you know, but they have like a Holy of Holies inside the church. They open up, they do communion for back in the Holy of Holies. You know, so these kinds of things are the kinds of traditions that the Russians are returning to, okay? And we should be thankful that those are the traditions they're returning to, not traditions of let's behead our enemy, right? Yes. And so as a consequence, we see somebody who's finally intelligent enough to see 5G is out, bioweapons are out, mRNA shots are out, the protocol of abortion is out, and proselytizing with the LGBT social terrorism is prohibited. You can't do it. It's against the law. We're going to protect marriage. We're going to pay people to have children. We're going to protect the family. We're going to protect the church. We're going to protect the society that engages in that to create a homogeneous society that is involved in the faith.
Amen. The best kind of society, the best kind of people, because it is dedicated to God and natural law and his creation and his commandments for how we are to live. What does the Lord require of thee but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God? And I think President Putin does a pretty good job for a political statesman on that level. And I think Russia and its people and its culture and everything you described is certainly doing it. And I would hope that Americans would rise up and do the same, and we would see that the coming judgment is a test for our strength and our faith to stand and to, as God says, as much as is within you, stand. He also says, as much as is within you, be at peace with all men. But he also said, There's a time for peace and a time for war. So we have to be prepared for that. And as you've described, the Pax Americana is over. It's done. And we have already pushed the plunger down, and it's a matter of time before that spark hits the keg and the natural phenomenon of the social, political, economic explosion occurs. It's already been hit. So we will pray and see. Thank you, Stephen Pigeon. It is an honor to have you on with us again. Such a blessing and such a great conversation. We look forward very much to having you on again. We thank you, Tong, for our producer, for allowing us to produce. And thank you for joining us, our audience. And we will see you next week. Good night. God bless you.